welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, delivering programs from radio's golden age. I'm your host, Mark LeVonier, for this hour of continuing series where we wrap up 2 4-part stories. Later on, the Silver Theater, but first, episode 4 of 4 of Wuthering Heights by Emily Bronte, adapted on the world's great novels. Heard on NBC on January 23, 1948.
The world's great novels. The National Broadcasting Company brings you the final episode in a 4-part version of Emily Bronte's Wuthering Heights, another in our series of books that live, the world's great novels.
Are you asleep, Mr. Lockwood?
No, Mrs. Dean. Merely enjoying the sight of the burning log.
Aye, it's a cheery sight on a chill evening. I brought you a pot of steaming coffee.
Oh, thank you.
I thought you might enjoy it in case you plan to sit up late reading.
I shall read tonight only if you force me to, Mrs. Dean.
What, sir?
I can't recollect how many evenings now I've hoped that you'd find time from your various duties as my housekeeper to finish the strange tale that surrounds Wuthering Heights and this house here.
Does my rambling interest you as much as all that, sir?
Well, I can think of little else, Mrs. Dean. In truth, when I rented Thrushcross Grange from Mr. Heathcliff for this year, I had no idea these English moors would prove so bleak and idle. Perhaps that in part accounts for my interest in your story, though I think I should find it just as absorbing if I heard it in busy London.
Well, sir, I'm flattered to say the least.
Then do take that rocker and continue.
Very well, sir.
You ended your narrative last time just after the death of Cathy Earnshaw Linton.
Yes. She died a few short hours after her little girl was born. Poor Mr. Linton was so distraught, the baby had scant attention for a few weeks, but he was too good to be thoroughly unhappy long. Time brought him resignation and a melancholy sweetness, and he centered his whole life in little Catherine. He did not pray for Cathy's soul to haunt him as Heathcliff did.
Well, I've been wondering if perhaps after Cathy's death, Heathcliff might not have mellowed toward his wife, Isabella Linton, whom he married out of spite.
If only he had, sir. His treatment of poor Isabella grew worse and worse, until one day she finally fled from him.
Oh, I see.
She stopped for an hour here at Thrushcross Grange and then went on to the south of London to live, where a son was born to her some months later.
And did Heathcliff not try to follow her?
Oh, he was glad to be rid of the sight of her, I think. And his plan of revenge took a longer view than the daily tormenting of Isabella.
So, what plan was that, Mrs. D?
You shall understand, sir, as I continue. The next 12 years were the happiest of my life. They were spent peacefully and quietly here at Thrushcross Grange, caring for my darling little Cathy. The only disturbing event of that period was the death of Mr. Hindley Earnshaw.
Oh.
Though he'd fallen low through drink and gambling, Hindley and I had practically grown up together in the old days at Wuthering Heights, and so I felt compelled to go and assist at the last duties.
What are you doing here, Ellen Dean? We want no visitors from Thrushcross Grange.
I've come to see if I may be of any service with Mr. Hindley, Mr. Heathcliff.
He's beyond all help. He died like he lived, in a drunken stupor.
But he deserves a decent and Christian burial, sir.
Well, if you insist, then take care of the matter. But I bid you remember that the money for the whole affair will come out of my pocket.
Out of your pocket, sir?
Surely you're not surprised, Ellen. Hindley died completely in debt. His entire property is mortgaged to me. I am now the sole master of Wuthering Heights, Ellen.
But what is to become of his son, little Hareton, the rightful heir?
He is not the rightful heir, and he is mine. Mine. Funny, eh, Ellen? That the son of the man who tried to keep me a groveling slave is now dependent on me.
But certainly Hareton Earnshaw's not to blame. What do you propose to do with him?
Do? I'll tell you what I plan to do, Ellen. I shall rear him as pleases my fancy. And we'll see if one tree won't grow as crooked as another with the same wind to twist it. Yes, we'll see.
Well, sir, as the years went on, I scarcely ever saw Wuthering Heights, though 'twas but 4 miles away. For 'twas one place Edgar Linton had given strict instructions that his daughter Kathy should never visit.
Yes.
Those dozen years were happy enough. And then Mr. Linton got word from his sister Isabella that she was dying. And she begged him to come to London and bring her son Linton back to Thrushcross Grange. This Edgar Linton did. But he had only had the child in the house a few hours when Mr. Heathcliff sent a servant to the Grange.
I'm instructed to see Mr. Linton.
A very unlikely hour to be troubling people. What business brings you here tonight?
It's Master Linton I must speak to. Oh,
Mr. Linton is going to bed. Unless you have something particular to say, I'm sure he won't hear it now.
I must see him now. Which is his room?
See here. Well, if you insist, I shall announce you.
That's better.
Yes?
A servant is here from Wuthering Heights, sir, who insists upon seeing you.
Heathcliff has sent me for his lad, and I mustn't go back without him.
If there were any way I could avoid this, I would,
There must be some way, sir. The boy is not well at best, and to send him to that place.
But it would be a useless battle, Ellen. Tell Mr. Heathcliff that his son shall come to Wuthering Heights tomorrow.
But I have...
He is in bed and too tired to go the distance now. Ellen will bring him tomorrow morning.
So the next day I took the boy over the moors to Wuthering Heights. It was early and Hareton and Heathcliff had just finished breakfast.
Hello, Ellen. I feared I should have to come down and fetch my property myself. You've brought it, have you? Well, let us see what we can make of it.
Don't be afraid, Linton.
What a beauty. What a lovely, charming thing. Oh, curse my soul. But it's worse than I expected. And the devil knows I was not sanguine.
Sit down, Linton, dear. You're all a tremble.
So he is. Tut-tut, none of that nonsense. You're your mother's child entirely. Where is my share in the puling chicken?
I hope you'll be kind to the boy, Mr. Heathcliff, or you'll not keep him long.
I'll be very kind to him, you needn't fear. Only nobody else must be kind to him. Hareton, you infernal calf, be going to your work.
I'm going.
Yes, Ellen. My son is prospective owner of Thrushcross Grange, and I should not want him to die until I was certain of being his successor.
I don't... quite understand, I...
Old Linton's will provided that if Edgar had no male heirs and Isabella did, Thrushcross Grange would go to Isabella's child. And her child is mine. I want the triumph of seeing my descendant fairly lord of their estates. That is the sole consideration which can make me endure the whelp. I despise him for himself and hate him for the memories he revives.
We at the Grange then lost all contact with young Linton as we had with the others at Wuthering Heights, and life settled back to its old pleasant way until Miss Cathy's 16th birthday. This 20th of March was a beautiful spring day, and Cathy was given permission to have a ramble on the edge of the moor with me in search of a colony of moor game. Her young legs kept so far ahead of me she had run almost to Wuthering Heights before I could catch up with her, and when I did... I beheld a couple of persons arrest her, one of whom was Mr. Heathcliff. The other turned out to be Hareton Earnshaw, now quite grown.
I've neither taken nor found any of your game, and I didn't mean to take them. But Papa told me there were quantities around, and I wished to see the eggs.
And who is Papa?
Mr. Linton of Thrushcross Grange. I thought you did not know me, or you wouldn't have spoken in that way.
You suppose Papa is highly esteemed and respected, then?
And what are you?
Miss Cathy, we really must go back.
Is that man your son?
Hareton? No, he is not my son. But I have one, and you've seen him before. And though your nurse is in a hurry, I think both you and she would be better for a little rest. Will you just turn this nab of heath and walk into my house?
You really mustn't on any account, Miss Cathy.
Why? I'm tired of running and the ground is dewy. I can't sit here. Oh, let us go, Ellen.
Come, Ellen, hold your tongue. It will be a treat for her to look in on us. Hareton.
Aye.
Get forward with the lass. You shall walk with me, Ellen.
Come along, miss.
Oh, good. I'm so glad.
Mr. Heathcliff, it's very wrong. You know you mean no good. And there she'll see Linton, and all will be told as soon as we return, and I shall have the blame.
I want her to see Linton. He's looking better these few days. It's not often he's fit to be seen. He's such a weakling. But where's the harm in it?
I'm convinced you have bad design in encouraging her to enter your house.
My design is as honest as possible. I'll inform you of its whole scope. That the two cousins may fall in love and get married. I'm acting generously to your master, Ellen. His young chit has no expectations. And should she second my wishes, she'll be provided for at once as joint successor with Linton.
If Linton died and his life is quite uncertain, Catherine would be the heir.
No, she would not. There is no clause in the will to secure it so. His property would go to me. But to prevent disputes, I desire their union and am resolved to bring it about.
With great reluctance, I accompanied them to Wuthering Heights, where Heathcliff summoned poor Linton, then turned to Cathy.
Now, who is that? Can you tell?
Your son?
Yes, yes. But is this the only time you have beheld him? Think now. Ah, you have a short memory. Linton, don't you recall your cousin that you used to tease us so with wishing to see?
What? Linton? Why, he's taller than I am. Are you Linton?
Yes.
Naughty Ellen, to try to hinder me from entering. But I'll take this walk every morning in the future. Won't you be glad to see me, Linton?
Linton, speak up.
What?
He shall be happier than you know to have you. And quite crestfallen if you break your promise.
Naturally, Mr. Linton, Cathy's father, had to know of our visit. And though he was greatly troubled, he did not scold Cathy. He explained, as simply as possible, the way Heathcliff had treated Isabella, and then forbade Cathy ever to visit the Heights again. A week after that, he contracted a severe cold, which settled in his lungs and kept him abed most of the time. Catherine spent her days by his side, and my evenings were so busy with household affairs, I was not able to inquire how she spent that time. But one evening, I searched the house and could find no trace of her. The servants affirmed they had not seen her. I returned to her apartment, extinguished my candle, and waited. Well, miss.
Ellen?
Yes. Where have you been riding at this hour? I saw you come in.
To the bottom of the park.
Oh, Catherine. You know you've been doing wrong, or you wouldn't be driven to tell me an untruth. That does grieve me.
Oh, but Ellen, I was so afraid of your being angry.
Well, I shan't be angry if you tell me the exact truth.
Well, I've been to Wuthering Heights, and I've never missed a day since Papa fell ill.
I thought as much.
I couldn't break my promise to Linton. It was not that I went to amuse myself, for I was often wretched the whole evening.
And why was that?
Because Linton gets cross with me so often. But I excuse him because he often feels ill. Once his father heard him speaking crossly to me, and he abused him terribly for doing it. So I told Linton he must whisper his bitter things to me.
Oh, that you should hear bitter words from anyone.
But, Ellen, I feel sorry for Linton. And when he's in a good mood, we do have a pleasant time together. Oh, now, Ellen, you've heard all. But you won't tell Papa, will you?
I'll make up my mind on that point tomorrow. It requires some thought. I thought it over aloud in my master's study, walking straight to his room from hers, relating the whole story. And the visits were stopped for good. But all winter and spring, suspiciously mature letters came from Linton to his uncle Edgar, begging that he at least be allowed to meet Catherine on the moors for a visit. Meanwhile, Mr. Linton's health failed rapidly, and it was apparent that he had not much longer to live. Summer was already past its prime when he finally agreed that Cathy and Linton might meet on the moors. It was a close, sultry day when we reached the appointed spot where Linton lay on the heath, looking very pale and miserable. Why, Master Linton, how ill you do look.
Oh, Linton, you do look ill. Are you worse than usual?
No, better. Better.
Oh, but you have been worse, I know. You're so much thinner than when last I saw you.
I'm tired, is all. And in the morning, I often feel sick. Papa says I grow so fast. Oh, please sit down. It's wearing to see anyone standing.
Linton, I don't think you wanted to see me at all. My father's very ill. Why did you call me from his bedside?
No, no, do not go. Oh, I cannot bear it. Catherine, I'm a traitor. No, I cannot tell you. But if you leave me, I shall be killed. Catherine, dear, my life is in your hands. You have said you loved me, and if you did, it wouldn't harm you. And perhaps you will consent, and he'll let me die with you.
Consent to what?
No, I dare not tell. My father threatened me, and I dread him. I dread him.
Oh, well, keep your secret if you're a coward.
Be quiet, dear sweet Catherine. Here comes my father.
Well, Ellen, it is something to see you so near to my house. How are you at the Grange? The rumor goes that Edgar Linton is on his deathbed. How long do you think he will last?
I don't know.
Get up, Linton. Get up. Don't grovel on the ground there. Up this way.
I will, Father. Only let me alone or I shall faint.
You would imagine I was a devil himself to excite such horror. Be so kind as to walk home with him, will you, lass? He shudders if I touch him.
My father has forbidden me to enter Wuthering Heights again.
Come now. My house is not stricken with the plague. You shall have tea before you go home. Come now.
My first instinct told me not to enter, and yet Linton was so miserable we were both moved to pity for him. But once inside, Heathcliff locked and bolted the door, and we soon realized we were prisoners. When he left the room, we rushed over to Linton. Master Linton, you know what your diabolical father is after, and you must tell us.
Yes, Linton, you must.
Papa wants us to be married. And he knows your papa wouldn't let us marry now, and he's afraid of my dying if we wait. So we are to be married in the morning, and you are to stay here all night.
Why, that man is mad or thinks us fools, every one. Do you imagine...
Be quiet, please be quiet.
But, Linton, sniveling again? You're pining for pure love, are you not?
Mr. Heathcliff, don't you see? If I stay here tonight, papa will be miserable. He shall think me lost. Oh, let me go home. I promise to marry Linton. I do love him.
Miss Linton, I shall enjoy myself remarkably in thinking your father will be miserable. You could have hit on no surer way of fixing your residence under my roof for the next 24 hours. As to your promise to marry Linton, I shall take care you shall keep it, for you shall not quit this place till it is fulfilled.
For a week, we were kept prisoners at Wuthering Heights. And during that time, Heathcliff had Cathy and Linton married. I was allowed to return before Catherine. But fortunately, she persuaded Linton to help her escape in time to be by her father's bedside when he died. The evening after the funeral, we were seated in the library when Heathcliff walked in, without even the ceremony of knocking. He was master now and availed himself of the master's privilege. When Catherine saw him, she rose with an impulse to dash out.
Stop! No more runnings away. I've come to fetch you home. And I hope you'll be a dutiful daughter and not encourage my son to further disobedience. I was embarrassed how to punish him when I found he had helped you escape. He is such a cobweb. A pinch would have annihilated him. But you'll see by his look that he received his due.
Why not let Catherine continue here and send Master Linton to her? As you hate them both, you'd not miss them.
I'm seeking a tenant for the Grange. And I want my children about me, to be sure. Besides, the lass owes me her services for her bed. I am not going to nurture her in luxury and idleness. Make haste and get ready now.
I shall. Linton is all I have to love in the world. And though you've done what you could to make him hateful to me and me to him, you cannot make us hate each other.
You are a boastful champion. But it is not I who will make him hateful to you, but his own sweet spirit. He is as bitter at gall at your desertion and its consequences. I heard him draw a pleasant picture to Zilla of what he would do if he were as strong as I. The inclination is there, and his very weakness will sharpen his wits to find a substitute for strength.
With those words, he took her away, and I've not seen her since. Linton died a short month later. Heaven only knows what she has had to endure in that place. Your report of her when you visited Wuthering Heights shortly after your arrival here, Mr. Lockwood, was the first news I've had of my lady. I can well imagine from your description the alterations in her personality.
That was the end of Mrs. Dean's narrative, at least for that time.
You see, it's some 6 months now since that evening in front of the fire at Thrushcross Grange. A week later, I went back to London on business. And I don't mind saying I'd had my fill of the bleak moorlands. But when my year's lease of Thrushcross Grange came to a close, I went back to settle accounts with Mr. Heathcliff and tell him I had no desire to occupy it further. An amazing change seems to have occurred at the Heights. Flowers were blooming around it in bright little patches, and there was about the whole place what seemed, though I could scarcely believe it, a happy air. I was even more surprised to find my old friend Ellen Dean in the kitchen.
Mr. Lockwood, you should have given us notice you were coming.
Well, I only want to finish my business with your master, Mrs. Dean.
What business, sir?
About the rent.
Oh, well, then you must settle with the lady of the house. Or rather, me. She has not learned to manage her affairs yet.
Well,
oh, you look surprised. You've not heard of Heathcliff's death?
Heathcliff dead? How long ago?
3 months since. But sit down and I'll tell you all about it.
Gladly. I've wondered many times about this strange house and its occupants. Go ahead, Mrs. Dean. Go ahead.
I was summoned to Wuthering Heights within a fortnight of your leaving us, and I obeyed joyfully for Catherine's sake. Mr. Heathcliff, who seemed strangely altered, did not explain his reason for sending for me except to say that I should keep Catherine out of his sight. This meant a great part of the time she stayed in the kitchen with me. And, of course, Hareton Earnshaw spent a great deal of time by the fire there, too. And usually, Cathy laughed at his ignorance and taunted him cruelly. But gradually, a change came over her attitude. She was lonely, needed companionship, and she began to make small overtures of friendship. But Hareton only growled or cursed at her. Finally, one day, as we three sat before the kitchen fire...
I know why Hareton never speaks when I'm in the kitchen. He's afraid I'll laugh at him. Ellen, what do you think? He began to teach himself to read once, and because I laughed, he burned the books.
Go away and let me be.
Hareton, if I gave you a book, would you take it now?
I want none of your books.
Oh, Hareton, please, I've found out that... that I should like you to be my friend now. Oh, Hareton, do you hear?
Get off, will you?
No, you must listen to me.
Will you go to the devil and let me be? I'll have naught to do with you and your mucky pride.
You should be friends with your cousin, Mr. Hareton, since she repents of her sauciness. That would do you a great deal of good. It would make you another man to have her for a companion.
A companion? Ha! She hates me and does not think me fit to wipe her shoon.
It is not I who hate you, it's you who hate me. You hate me as much as Mr. Heathcliff does.
You're an infernal liar. Why have I made him angry by taking your part time and again? And that when you sneered at and despised me.
I didn't know you took my part. And I was so miserable and bitter at everyone. But now I thank you and beg you to forgive me. What else can I do? Well, perhaps this kiss will convince you. There.
Well, miss. I must say that's a little bold.
What else could I do, Ellen? He wouldn't shake hands and he wouldn't look. I had to show him some way I like him. Oh, say you'll forgive me, Hareton, do. Oh,
but, Cathy,
And you'll be my friend?
You'll be ashamed of me every day of your life.
I shall not, for I shall teach you to read as good as I. Oh, come now, let us begin with this book here.
The intimacy thus commenced grew rapidly. I was afraid it would greatly anger Mr. Heathcliff, but, as I said, he was acting so strangely, going off for days at a time and eating scarcely once in 24 hours, that he took little notice of their attachment. And when he finally did, he simply stared into the fire and said,
"It is a poor conclusion, is it not, Ellen? An absurd termination to my violent exertions. I get levers and mattocks to demolish the two houses, and when everything is ready and in my power, I find not the will to lift a slate off either roof. Where is the use?" It sounds as if I had become suddenly charitable. Well, it is far from being the case. I have merely lost the faculty of enjoying their destruction. Ellen, I want to call Mr. Green here and make my will.
Mr. Heathcliff, there's plenty of time for that. You're a young man and healthy.
No, change is working daily. I feel it coming nearer and nearer.
Then you have no fear of death?
Fear? It is my fondest hope. At last my body would be able to join my soul, which was buried with Catherine Earnshaw 18 years ago.
Heathcliff took to wandering about the moors constantly. He hardly ever spoke to us, though he always had a look of happiness on his face. One night he returned wet to the skin from a driving rain, and when I went to call him the next morning, his eyes met mine so keen and fierce I started, and he seemed to smile. But when I put my hand to his forehead, I found he was stark and dead. Some folk about say he and Kathy still walk the moors together, but you'd say idle talk, and so say I.
Curtin, come in now. You must have another lesson.
Only if I get a kiss before I start. Oh. And one for every time I mispronounce a word.
Oh, that's the surest way I know of having you learn nothing.
Those two seem quite happy.
Aye, they are, sir. And my happiest moment shall be at their wedding, which will take place on New Year's Day. Will you not speak to them?
No, Mrs. Dean. No, from the look on Hareton's face, he should never forgive me if I was so crude as to interrupt his bliss.
Oh, Mr. Lockwood.
But I should like for you to deliver to them my heartiest wishes. My walk home was lengthened by a diversion in the direction of the kirk. I sought and soon discovered the three headstones in the slope next the moor. The middle one, Kathy Earnshaw Linton's, was gray and half buried in the heath. Edgar Linton's only harmonized by the turf and moss creeping up its foot. Heathcliff's still bare. I lingered round them under that benign sky, watched the moss fluttering among the heath and harebells, listened to the soft wind breathing through the grass, and wondered how anyone could ever imagine unquiet slumbers for the sleepers in that quiet earth.
Wuthering Heights by Emily Bronte is one of the world's great novels, brought to you each week by the National Broadcasting Company.
The World's Great Novels on Tuned to Yesterday, an NBC episode from January 23, 1948. Emily Bronte's story, Wuthering Heights, was adapted much during radio's golden era, and none of her other poems or short stories, for this was her singular effort in terms of a novel. A year after it was published, she passed away at the age of 30. This is an hour of series on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. Now time for episode 4 of 4 of First Love on the Silver Theater. A CBS episode from October 24th, 1937.
The 1847 Silver Theater. Starring Rosalind Russell and James Stewart in an original story, First Love.
Today we bring to a close the story of Gene Wilson and Jimmy Parks, taking up the thread of the romance right where we left off last week. And now for our play. The lights are being dimmed, and the silver curtain is rising on the Grover Jones story, First Love, starring Rosalind Russell and James Stewart. We hope you like it.
Hey, Jimmy, take it easy.
We've got to find her, Perry. We've got to find Jean, do you hear?
Yeah, but wouldn't you just assume we were still alive when we do?
Oh, she's only at the station.
Yeah, and you can talk her into coming back. Something tells me that's going to take eloquence, my boy, the way she was feeling when she ran out of that apartment.
Why did she have to take it that way, Perry?
Look out. Oh, Jimmy.
What if I did give a bunch of people percentages on her first year's salary to help make her a star? That's been done before.
Oh, don't be a sap. That's not why Jean ran out on you, and you know it. What busted her up was finding out that you lied when you said you believed in her. It's like I told you from the first, Jimmy.
I'll look in the station. You wait here.
Hey, wait a minute. I'll go.
The Examiner Times paper.
Yes, sir? Ticket?
No, look, has a girl bought a ticket in here tonight since midnight, I mean?
Oh, where would she been going?
Well, east, New York, maybe. Or Springfield, that's it. Springfield, Massachusetts, that's where she'd be going.
I haven't sold any ticket to Springfield. Besides, there's no train east out of here for about 5 hours, not until 7:30.
Well, have you seen her? Look, she's about 5'4", no, 5'5", no, and pretty, awful pretty, and brown hair, brown eyes, and had on a suit, brown, maybe blue. Well, I don't know, but...
I'm afraid I can't help you, but I'll keep an eye out.
Examiner Times, paper, read.
What luck, Jimmy?
No luck, no luck. No train out for 5 hours.
Where now?
Well, the hotels. We're going to check on everyone in Hollywood.
Jimmy,
and then we're
going
to start on the rooming houses.
Oh, hey, but you can't wake people up at this hour. Besides, we ought to get some sleep.
Sleep? I said we're going to find Jean.
But that name registered.
Well, she might have used another name. Now, look, she's about so tall and dark hair and brown eyes, and I think she had a suit on, a gray suit, maybe green.
Freight is not here. Sorry.
No, wait. Hello. No, this girl would have come in since midnight. She's not? Okay, thanks.
Now, see here, young fellow. For the third time, Jean Wilson ain't here. She moved away a couple of weeks ago. Got a job in the movies. Now, will you quit waking me up?
Well, I just thought she might have come back. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's all right if it's urgent, but she's not here at the YWCA. I'm sorry.
Clap time.
No one that answers that description. Sorry.
And she didn't buy a ticket. Sorry.
Not at this hotel. Sorry.
Haven't seen her. Sorry.
Not at YW, sorry.
No one that answers that description, sorry.
Not here, sorry.
Haven't seen her, sorry.
No ticket, sorry.
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 Sorry. Sorry.
Sorry.
Sorry. Oh, Jimmy, it's no use. Give it up.
We're going to keep going. Let's go.
But, Jimmy, it's almost... Oh, all right. Where now?
Where? I don't know. Or do you just keep driving? I'll think of someplace.
Okay.
Jeannie, where?
I hope you know this whole business is crazy, Jimmy.
It's crazy, Jimmy. It's crazy. You'll never be able to make me a star. As long as both of us together, I'll try.
Yes, sir, it's bets. Chasing all over town ever since midnight.
Until midnight, Jimmy. 10 hours till midnight. When this dress turns back into an apron and that limousine we came in back into a pumpkin.
Oh, Jeannie.
What'd you say, Jimmy?
I didn't say anything. Keep driving.
Okay. But the next time you start out to turn some gal into a star,
a falling star, Jimmy. Superstitious. I'm glad, Jimmy. And I love you, Jimmy. I do love you. Oh, I do. Good night, Jimmy. Good night, Jimmy.
Of course, it's like I told you from the first. You never should have told her all those lies.
All those lies, Jimmy. Lies and pretense. Lectures to talk. That's how we find out things. Funny things. Things we can laugh about. But why don't you laugh? Why don't we all laugh?
No, Jeannie. No. No, you don't understand. Come back.
Hey, what?
She won't come back, Mary. We're not going to find her. She'll never come back.
Coffee.
That all?
That's all.
Okay. Jean Wilson.
Hello, Marge.
Say, I didn't recognize you at first. Gee, how are you anyway?
Me? Oh, I'm fine, Marge.
I'll get you coffee. Say, it's well to see you. I read all that stuff in the paper. Here you are. Gosh, think of you being a star across the street from the same restaurant where you used to juggle trays. Ain't life funny, though? Want some more cream?
Huh? No, thank you.
Oh, I wish you'd have come in earlier so the other girls could have seen you. Say, what are you doing here all alone this hour of the morning? Been working over the studio making night scenes? Or did you just get lonesome for the old place?
Yeah, that's it. Lonesome.
Funny how you can feel about a place you work once in. Oh, say, I wanted to ask you. All that stuff in the papers about you being an international actress and stuff, that's just a lot of bunk, ain't it?
Yeah. That's all it is. Bunk.
That's what I told Ruthie. I says, Ruthie, it stands to reason. If she was a big star, she wouldn't have been working here with us. And I told her. Hey, what's the matter? Do you feel all right? I mean, you look sort of...
Yeah, I'm all right.
Oh, what was I saying? Oh, yeah. Besides Ruthie, I says, look who her manager is. That Jimmy Parks guy. The fellow who used to be head of the publicity department across the street. Everybody knows he's the biggest liar in Hollywood. Why, look how he made a star out of that Trista Lane. Just by making people think she was... Hey, aren't you going to finish your coffee? Hey, Jean, wait a minute. You're changed.
Well, good morning, Miss Wilson. Good morning. Glad to see you.
Mr. Rickey.
Sit down.
But there's no time...
You'd better. I have an idea you and I have a good deal to talk about this morning.
A good deal to... Mr. Rickey, do you already know what I'm here to tell you?
Yes, Miss Wilson, I do. You see, Trista Lane called me after she left your apartment last night.
Oh, I see. Well, I'm glad. That makes it much easier. All that she told you was true, Mr. Rickey. I'm not an international star. And I was a waitress in the restaurant across the street. The whole thing was just a little idea of Mr. Parks to...
To get back at me for firing him. I know. But something tells me you didn't know, Miss Wilson. Not about that part of it.
Well, what difference does it make? All that matters is that you have a contract with a girl that can't act. Well, that's why I'm here this morning. Mr. Rickey, I brought this.
What is it?
My copy of the contract between us. If you'll just write me a check for $51.46, you may have it back.
A check? $51.40... What are you talking about?
Well, that happens to be the price of a ticket to Springfield. I'd rather not have taken anything,
but Miss Wilson, it also happens that you're not going to Springfield.
What do you mean?
I have no intention of canceling that contract.
But it was made through fraud, and when you signed me, you thought that I was...
I thought you'd be a good box office, and you are. As for the ballyhoo of Parks, it's great publicity. Now we'll tell the public the truth about you, and they'll be more interested than ever.
But, Mr. Rickey, that's crazy. I mean, you don't understand. I'd be no good to you. I can't act.
I can't believe that. Remember, I saw you make that test yesterday with Trista Lane.
But that was different. That was because I had someone... I mean, something I could count on. But now it's no use. Oh, Mr. Rickey, you've got to let me out of that contract.
I'm afraid I can't do that, Miss Wilson. Besides, you're just a little upset now, and hard work's the best thing in the world for you.
Oh, but please, I...
I have a script called Cold Embers ready to go into production. Great story, Miss Wilson. A story of women in the war. And there's a girl in there... Well, when that picture is released, and with you in that part, you will be an international star.
Oh, no, Mr. Rickey, please. Please, you don't understand. You've got to let me out of it.
I do understand, Miss Wilson. And now you better go home and get some sleep. Beginning tomorrow, you're going to be a very busy young woman.
But please,
yes,
please, you've got to listen.
Make appointments for Miss Wilson tomorrow morning. A makeup test at 9.
No.
Fittings at
no,
10.
Please.
Photographs
Rickey,
at
no.
12. And interviews from 2 to 4. And see
that
she gets the script.
Rolling.
Scene 14, take 9.
Action. And please, Miss Wilson, give me something this time, eh?
But don't you understand? The man's an enemy, Margaret. We don't dare give him shelter.
He's hurt, and he needs care. Are we to let men die because they don't wear the right uniform?
Oh, if Joe and all the rest felt that way, where would we be?
Well, they don't. They're killing every chance
cut,
they get.
Cut! Angie! Oh, no, Miss Wilson, we can't spend the entire day on this one scene. Quiet! I want this set, quiet!
Quiet!
Assistant, no visitors. Visitors off the set, please.
Yes, Mr. LaRue. I'm sorry, but you folks left. Get off
the set. I will explain again. The whole spirit of the story is in the lines you speak in the scene. There is determination, there is bitterness, there is despair. All the complex emotions that a woman feels in time of war. Now, put those things into it. Feel the scene, please. We take it again. Turn them over.
Rolling.
Scene 14, take 10.
Action.
But don't you understand? The man's an enemy, Margaret. We don't dare give him shelter.
He's hurt and he needs care. Are we to let men die because they...
No. Cut. Will you tell me what is wrong with you?
Oh, maybe it's my fault, Miss Wilson. Maybe
I'm not getting... Of course it's not your fault. It's, It's so... Oh, Mr. LaRue, I want to do what you say. I'm trying. I seem to be all tied up inside. Can we try it again?
No, no, we try it no more. We're wasting time. The company's dismissed for the day. It is no good, Ricky. The girl is flat, colorless. The day she took the test, she was an actress. Now she's a stick.
All right, I'll get another story. I'll get a dozen stories if I have to. But I'm going to make a picture with Gene Wilson, and you're going to direct it.
You're crazy, Jimmy. She won't even see you.
But I'm not going to see Gene. I'm going to see Ricky.
He'll throw you out.
And this one had better be good. Because if this script doesn't fit that girl, I'll fire you all and get some writers who can write. I'm busy.
Mr. Parks is here again. Says he must see you.
Parks, tell him to get off the lot and stay off. Turner, how soon can you have this new story ready to shoot? We've got to get started on the picture. We have to get our money.
No, no! Cut! Miss Wilson, in this story you are supposed to be gay, to laugh. This is a comedy we are playing, not Macbeth. Will you please try?
I am trying, but I can't do it. I can't do it, I tell you.
We've tried her in 6 stories, and she couldn't play any of them. That's why I brought you from New York, Max. If you can't write one that she can play, I don't know what to do.
But I tell you, I've got to see Martin Ricky.
Cut, cut. I give up. There is no use. I'm through. Completely and absolutely finished.
Parks, I gave orders to keep you off the lot.
Ricky, you've got to listen to me for 5 minutes, please. Ricky, I want to be honest with you.
What do you know about honesty? I gave you the best publicity job in Hollywood. I paid you top salary for 5 years. I saw you through every scrape that your crazy hot-headedness got you into. And how do you thank me for it? By one of the lowest tricks that ever was pulled in Hollywood. And you talk to me about honesty.
I know all that, Ricky. But I'm not here this morning for myself, Ricky. I swear I'm not.
Oh. Maybe you've got a new actress to sell me, huh? Somebody else that I can waste $200,000 on. Do you realize that I hired the best writers in the country to turn out scripts for that girl and... Ah, well, never mind. She's through. Have you got any more great
Ricky.
Ideas?
Ricky, let me write a story for her.
Ah, you're crazy.
That's what I'm here for, Ricky. I've got a story that she can play.
What are you talking about?
It's her story. Her own story, Ricky. The story of a girl with one single dream, one ambition, and a guy who is too much of a fool to recognize that dream in time. Let me do it, Ricky. This won't cost you a dime, but you've just got to let me write it.
Well, what makes you think she'd be any better in this story than she was in any of the others?
You saw her that day on that test with Trista. She was great. You know it. Well, since then, something's happened to Jane. I know what it is. She's lost the one thing an actress must have. Faith in herself. Well, the story I'm going to write will give that back. It'll make her see a lot of things straight now that seem twisted up in a million crazy shapes. And oh, Ricky, I've got to do it. I've got to do it for so many reasons. Please give me this chance.
All right, Jimmy. I never knew you to do a bad job on anything you had your heart in. I've got a hunch your heart is in this.
Burn up the keys.
No, I'll be quiet.
Okay, Mr. Hess.
Hey, what is this Hess business?
If you'd stop work long enough to read the paper, you'd know. It's your nom de plume, or should I say de type. It's all over the movie columns this morning that Superb has finally found a story for Gene Wilson. A story called Hollywood Girl by Ronald Hess. What a name, Ronald.
Never mind now. He is writing it for all you know. You just keep your mouth shut, see?
How about to Gene?
Most of all to Gene. Now, she's not to know.
Fine business. You're writing practically a stenographic report of the things you've said to each other. And you expect her not
to...
Am I? The girl in that story is Jean and the fellow is you, Jimmy, my boy. The masks you put on them are so thin it'd take a blind man to be fooled.
No, come on, you get out of here and mind your own business. Here's the third sequence. Now tell Ricky I'll get the rest of it by tomorrow night.
Oh, Jimmy, you can't. Use your head. You can't keep working like this. Get some rest and some decent food.
Don't worry. I'll get rest. Plenty of it. After this picture's finished.
What do you mean?
Well, I think Hollywood and I can do without each other for a while. I thought I'd do a little traveling, maybe down to Australia, you know. I've always wanted to see those wombat and the platypus and the kangaroos. Hey, what is that? Now, come on, get out of here.
Okay, okay.
Perry.
Yeah?
Perry, when do they start to shoot? Did Ricky tell you?
Sure, tomorrow. They're going to start with that sequence in the park. When the guy tells a girl he can make her a star. Wonder where you ever got that idea.
Well, Perry, now, you stick around. And you watch the lighting and watch Jean's makeup, now everything. And if she's not getting every break, you go to Ricky and you tell him. Now, you do that, Ricky.
Okay, okay. Ronald Hess.
Quiet. Turn them over.
Pardon me, Mr. LaRue. Jean, the old faithful curl that's in your eyes again.
Oh, thank you. How's that?
That's swell. Excuse me, Mr. LaRue.
Quite all right. Thank you for noticing. Eh bien, turn them over.
Rolling.
Scene 37, take one.
Action, please.
I'll make you a star, Helen, so help me. I'll do it.
But I'm warning you, I can't act. Not anymore.
Of course you can. And we'll be together. I'll be there to pull you through. Together we're a cinch. Say you'll do it, Helen.
All right, Tommy. It's crazy. And I know I'll let you down, but as long as we're together, I'll do it.
Oh, Helen, I could kiss you.
You could, Tommy? You have.
Cut. Excellent, excellent. Thank you both.
Save the light.
I'm delighted, Miss Wilson, delighted. I see already that this story for you is the answer.
Yes. Yes, I'm beginning to think it is. Mr. LaRue, who's writing this story, do you know?
Someone by the name of Ronald Hess, I understand.
Yes, but who is Ronald Hess?
I have no idea. The name is new to me.
Hey, Gene, that's...
Mr. Burke, do you by any chance happen to know who is this Ronald Hess?
Who, me? Say, I make it a point never to know any writers. No.
I see. Perhaps we'd better go on shooting, Mr. LaRue.
Exactly. Cameraman, give me a setup over here, and let's have it quiet for rehearsal.
You're haywire, Jimmy. You can't end it that way.
No, I'm writing this story.
But the public won't go for it. So far, it's been a swell story. You got to get the boy and the girl together in the end.
Why? You say the story's been good. Well, do you know the reason? Because it's real, honest, and genuine. That's why. Well, it's going to end that way. The guy's a heel, isn't he? Well, as long as he's a heel, he doesn't deserve it.
Ever hear of this thing called love?
Yeah. She's not in love with him. She couldn't be.
Jimmy, you may know publicity, but when it comes to women, you're 4 points below being a moron.
Yeah? Well, this story, she doesn't love him, see? She gives him his walking papers right here on this speech. Now, listen. The fellow's come to say goodbye to her, see? And she says, why did you have to come back? Isn't it better to forget things that are over and done with? The one decent thing you might have done is to leave me alone. Oh, no, no, I'd better just stay that way. It reads better. Let's see. Why did you have to come back? Isn't it better to forget things that are over and done with?
The one decent thing you might have done was to stay away. I almost thought I loved you once, Tommy. But I know now I didn't, and I never could. There's too big a barrier of lies and pretense. And what I'm trying to say is this. There was a time I needed just one thing in life, Tom, and that was faith. Your faith in me. But you didn't come through, Tommy, because you didn't have that faith. Now will you go? And this time don't come back. Please, Tommy. Please, don't come back.
That is a picture. Perfect.
It's not. It's not. It's all wrong. It can't be like that. Perry. Perry, where is he? Where does he take me to?
Wayne, him? But he said...
I don't care what he said. Take me to him.
Was that you, Perry? I'll be right out. I'm making some reservations. Hello. That's right, yeah. The 840 to San Francisco. Yeah, Laura, thanks. Well, Perry, listen, how did the scene go? Jeannie.
I came to see Mr. Hess. Perry told me he lived here.
Well, Perry's back. You better go back to the studio.
Oh, but I won't. Till I see Mr. Hess. That story has got to be changed. And you know how? I'll show you.
Well, here, Jeannie, now, wait a minute.
Now, you read over my shoulder, Jimmy. I'll show you what that closing speech of hers should be.
Let's stop this crazy business of torturing ourselves. I love you for writing the script for me. I love you for trying to keep it a secret. I love you for, oh, who cares what for. I love you. Jeannie, is this, you mean, could you?
Yes, Jimmy. I could, and I do.
Oh, Jeannie, my darling.
Mike.
Oh, Perry, now.
Don't mind me. That's all I wanted to know. Scene 382, close-up. The two stand in close embrace, forgetting that there's anyone in the world but themselves, as we slowly fade out. The end.
You're wrong, Perry. Isn't he, Jimmy?
Dead wrong.
It's the beginning. It's just scene one. And believe me, this is going to be a picture.
The Silver Theater on Tuned to Yesterday from October 24th, 1937 on CBS. Wrapping up this hour of continuing series on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to join us next week at the same time where we bring you more installments of great stories from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. It's been a pleasure.